The following program is brought to you by Podcast One Sportsnet. Don't forget to download our new Podcast One app.
Quick break to tell you guys about NFL Game Pass, the only way that you can replay every game all season long. You can relive all the gutsy calls, crazy catches, wild comebacks, and breakout stars from every game every week. It's all the action, all the football you can handle, all in one place. So every game that we're talking about right now, you guys can rewatch it after the fact. I'm going to be going back, and you guys can too. Go check out Lamar Jackson in week one. Go check out Dak Prescott and what that Cowboys offense actually did. Go check out Kyler Murray and his NFL debut. That's my favorite thing about NFL Game Pass. You can go back and watch at any time. And if you haven't watched a condensed game yet, you have to try it out. It's every play from the game back to back to back, so you can replay an entire NFL game in the fraction of the time it normally takes. It's how I'm able to follow all the MVP candidates, all the breakout stars, and, of course, your waiver wire pickups all season long. To see all the action this season and stay on top of all the big storylines, you need NFL Game Pass. Best of all, you can kick off the 2019 NFL season with a 7-day free trial of NFL Game Pass. Just sign up now at NFL.com/ProFootballFocusNFL.
I'm so excited to be welcoming Hotboxing with Mike Tyson to the Podcast One family. Listen as Mike Tyson, the baddest man on the planet, pours his soul into conversations with fascinating minds, celebrities, and athletes. Along with his cosmic millennial sidekick and former NFLer, Eben Britton, Kid Dynamite dives deep into the issues impacting us all today. This podcast will change the way you see the world. Don't miss Hotboxing with Mike Tyson every week on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One.
Welcome in to the PFF NFL podcast. Steve Palazzolo here with Sam Monson. We're live having breakfast with everyone on YouTube here.
Yeah, got the coffee.
8 a.m. Yeah, thanks.
You're welcome. I had limited amount of carrying capacity and Austin had already bitched at me. So this...
You have a venti Starbucks coffee.
Well, yeah. You right now are bitching at me.
Yeah.
So next time that will motivate me to get you one. Austin did this last time, so I got him one this time.
This is like influencing the refs.
Yeah.
If you complain about enough calls,
right,
you'll get the next
one. You spend all week bitching about, you know, oh, look at the tripping, and then suddenly you get two random tripping calls out of nowhere.
That's how you do it. I mean, I'm a little disappointed that we're sitting here. We have an early podcast. Mm-hmm. And you rolled in. I saw you double-fisted, double Starbucks walking in. And I was like, oh, look at this. My podcast partner got something for me.
Yeah.
Nope. Drops it on Austin's desk instead.
Yeah. Well, look, as I say, he complained about it last time. So he got the coffee next time. You've done it this time. So you can pencil one in for the next time.
Venti dark roast. That's what I like. Something simple.
Gotcha.
Now, since it is the holiday season, though, mm-hmm. if you dropped a peppermint mocha or...
I'm never ordering one of those.
Gingerbread.
For you. No.
What? I get into the holiday season lattes.
Yeah, no, I can't. Yeah. I'm not ordering something with
pumpkin spice latte, gingerbread, peppermint mocha. I'm all in on all those.
With the one exception of the time I ordered a bumblebee with a buzz.
Yeah, you did.
Just to find out what it was. I stick to very simple coffee orders. I can't be the whole, you know, half calf, double. You know, no, I can't. It's look.
Do you remember that?
I want a venti coffee, please.
I put that tweet out there a couple of years ago and people thought it was real.
What?
From the combine. I was like, just stood behind a general manager and I made up some ridiculous order and I said half calf double shot, which of course offsets each other.
Right.
And people were just like, they started off guessing who the GM was because we were at the combine. I was like, just stood behind a GM and this was his ridiculous Starbucks order. They were trying to guess who the GM was. And then other people were trying to figure out why he would go half calf. A double shot.
Yeah.
And it was awesome. But it sounded like a real Starbucks order.
I would love to hear there being a reason for that. You know,
right.
With a complicated, I see that.
Yeah. Like, I don't want the regular coffee caffeine. I just want the espresso. Like, I don't know. There's somebody probably does
that.
I'm
just saying, I'm not ordering you anything that contains peppermint or pumpkin spice.
I'll take a venti dark roast.
Right. That's what's happening.
It's usually the Christmas blend here.
Yeah.
Anyway, we're all creeping back toward average here. As we get ready for Thanksgiving, we're going to go through all of the games. And if you guys are traveling for Thanksgiving, hopefully you've got a nice full 2 to 6 hour podcast here.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Break it all
somewhere
down
in there.
We'll see where we land.
Yeah.
Any other housekeeping items?
No. So this is the preview podcast for this week. There will be no other.
There will be no other.
No.
This is it. Week 13. Let's get right into it. We got some sponsors. We got some other promo codes coming out, too.
That's keeping
there is a...
You want to stay tuned for that.
The PFF promo code coming up. All right, let's get into the Thanksgiving games. Are you going to be... You plopped down on the couch just watching every game? Or you got a host? What are you doing here again?
So my parents have come up to visit, so we have to clean the entire house, which is what happens when your parents come to visit.
Oh, yeah.
Including I had to rent a carpet cleaner, right? Which turned into the most ridiculous ordeal in the world. I have a Kroger that's like 2 minutes from my front door, right? And I know that they rent these things. It's like, sweet, I just go to Kroger, rent it, and take 5 minutes. Roll in there. I've got them sitting on the shelves, and they just like hang a piece of paper over it that says out of order. So you're like, okay, fine. None of this Kroger. So I looked up the online thing, and they have them at Walmart, which is like 10 minutes further down the road, right? So I go to Walmart, or I order it online because you can reserve them. Go to Walmart to pick it up, and they have what amounts to a giant carpet cleaning vending machine. Right?
What?
Yeah. So it's like, it's big square thing and they're behind these doors. And when you scan your thing that you just booked and it unlocks the door and you wheel it away, right?
Vending machine.
Broken. The machine is broken and there's a tech coming to fix it sometime later in the week.
Did you have to clean your carpets just because your parents are coming into town? Are they like neat freaks? Or are you just really trying to impress them?
No, but the state of the
car. I got you.
They kind of needed to be done anyway.
I
and
got you.
This was the moment that spurred action, right?
I don't know if it was like the doctors are coming into town and, you know.
No. Like there was like, there was concerning stains on them from, you know, 2 years of 6 year old child on them.
Understandable.
So I then have to ring them up and get them to refund that because they can't fix the machine, right? And then the lady on the phone gives me like several alternate locations where they exist. So two more Krogers down. I'm like, right, this is the last Kroger I'm going into. And if they don't have one here, I don't care. I'm just not doing it. Finally get one, wheel it home, giant heavy thing. You then have to like load this thing up with hot water. It's like a giant vacuum. It's like vacuuming, but with all the worst parts made worse, right? It's heavier. It makes the carpet wet underneath you in a way that a vacuum doesn't. It's just a disaster.
How long do you have this thing for?
I rented it for 48 hours. It's actually right now, it is sitting in the passenger seat of my car on the way back.
I might run home. Can I borrow it during lunch?
Oh, you can take it home at lunch. I've got it until like 7 p.m. this evening. So if you want to clean a rug between now and then.
Honestly, I might run home to take care of, you know, we have six. Our Thanksgiving is six children, five and under,
around
my house.
That seems like a mistake.
Only three of which are mine.
Right.
So this will be... quite the adventure.
So yeah.
That's great.
So my wife, Laura, was like, you know, we save hundreds from getting a guy clean. We should think about doing this like every few months. I was like, well, how many hundreds? Because this was a giant pain in the ass.
Oh no! At some point, it's okay to pay people for things you don't want to do.
We need to talk price because there's quite a large sum of money I'd be willing to pay to not have to do this
absolutely.
Again.
Well, that's great. I'm glad. Glad the carpet's clean over there.
Yeah. So anyway, that's what we're doing. We're hosting my parents in a renewedly clean house.
And if you have a better carpet cleaner as a potential sponsor, let us know.
Yeah. Or someone that's willing to do it for cheap.
Yeah. We'll push you here on the podcast. All right. Now let's get into all the Thanksgiving action. Chicago Bears at the Detroit Lions. It's a Thanksgiving tradition.
Mm.
The noon 12:30, whatever it is, 12:30 game at Detroit. They usually don't have the same game 2 years in a row. It used to be like the Lions would play an AFC team 1 year and then the NFC team the next year, and they'd switch with the Cowboys. This is an exact rematch from last year's. You know, it was Bears Lions last year.
Right. More importantly, it's Jeff Driscoll against Mitchell Trubisky.
Yeah. Hey, Mitchell looked all right last week. It's going to be he's creeping back toward average.
Back toward average over the last couple of weeks.
Shop.pff.com. I mean, the improvement in Trubisky, it's not like it's very Bortlesy, right? I mean, there are enough games where he looks pretty reasonable.
Like emphasis on the average, right?
Yeah.
He's a world away from good.
Sure.
But he's not grading in the 40s anymore.
So on one hand, I thought the offense looked a little bit cleaner last week for the Bears. It had a little bit of that trickeration, and there was a wide open seam route that was dropped that should have been an easy big chunk play. Like, they're scheming it up a little bit better. On the other hand, it was the Giants.
Yes.
In their secondary.
Yeah. So it was interesting because this is what the offense should have looked like, right?
Right.
Which is basically like it's functioning. Guys are open, and now Trubisky's just making enough misses to make it interesting. As opposed to before, yeah, where it's like, this is just nothing functions because Trubisky is playing so bad, we can't even execute any sort of offense. Like, this is just, this is what the offense should look like, and now the quarterback is holding it back to a regular degree.
Right.
But, like, to a winnable degree. I mean, you beat the Giants playing like this. The Lions are now no great shakes either. You can win with Trubisky playing merely average football, which he's been playing the last couple of weeks.
He has. So maybe it won't be that much of a disaster of a game. Plus, it'll, it's in the dome.
Yes, and it'll help if Khalil Mack has another game like he had last week where he absolutely wrecks his opposing blocker, which in this case would be Taylor Decker.
Yeah, Decker's just been okay. Yes?
Grade-wise? Let's have a look. He last graded time I checked. Terribly last week against Chandler Jones. This isn't last week. This is... week one, he graded terribly. Last week, he did well against the Redskins. He's actually on a run of good form. Over the season, he's been okay.
60s, right? In the 60s?
He's clawed his way up into the 70s, 73.2 overall.
That's not bad.
That's basically down to the last month, right? Against Oakland, no pass rush. Chicago, the last time. Dallas and Washington, we've got four straight pretty good games, which has pulled his grade right up.
Well, there you go.
But we've seen, I mean, he is on the other end of arguably Khalil Mack's finest career highlight, which was just running the hell right through Taylor Decker. So there's definitely the capacity for that to happen again.
So there's certainly a matchup to watch there. Driscoll's had a rough stretch the last few weeks. I mean, he's really only played one decent stretch of football
ever
in his career.
Yeah.
And it was when he transferred from Florida to Louisiana Tech. He was always a little bit toolsy, you know, decent arm, athletic, could run a little bit. And the thing that could work with these Lions receivers, again, when you have Marvin Jones and you have Kenny Golladay and you've got Hockenson, what we've seen from Stafford is that aggressiveness throwing the ball down the field, you know, that gives Driscoll in this pass game a shot in any given week.
Right. So he is a bad quarterback along with a bunch of other bad quarterbacks, but unlike the other guys, he has the tools, he has the physical abilities to make random big plays that will make you forget about a lot of bad, or at least make people intrigued enough to live with the bad, hoping that eventually they can swing the balance back towards, you know, the good things and away from the bad.
Right.
So in a way that, like, if Ryan Finley did all the things that Jeff Driscoll did and, you know, substituted one crazy big play for just a couple more, you know, decent plays, you would be dramatically more inclined to run with Driscoll than you would with Finley because...
Yeah, I mean, if Finley could do that, they would have had a shot last week. For all the bad that there was against Pittsburgh, if you can sneak one of those big plays
in. But it's just amazing the sort of the difference that it makes to attitude and perception, right? It's like you're looking at a fundamentally bad player who, because of these, the propensity to every now and again, will make a crazy play happen. You're like, ooh, ooh. You know, the way like we were talking about Mariota, right? The second you wanted to bench him, he'd make a big play and we're like, oh, okay, fine. Let's give him a little bit longer. This is like the same thing, but, you know, in terms of maybe we give him a bit longer in future, you know, it's like every one of those big plays buys him like another three quarters of bad play.
Yeah.
But yet ultimately, you know, it's never going to happen. Like we've wasted everybody's time.
It's a good game to kick things off.
It's either a good one or a terrible one, right? This either needs to go at the start where everybody's too busy, you know, eating and stuff, or it needs to come at the end when everybody's hammered and doesn't care.
No, I think it's at the beginning when people are still cooking.
Okay. Or it's just on in the background.
It's background noise. It's the background noise game.
Okay.
It's like your noon Big Ten kickoff. You know, it's like Iowa, Minnesota. But Minnesota's good this year. It's Northwestern and Purdue at noon.
Yeah.
And it just feels like.
Yeah, it's good. I like that description. It's background as, you know, you're finishing the meal.
Who wins the background noise bowl?
The background noise bowl. I have gone Detroit.
All right. I'm going with the Bears.
Okay.
Trust that defense and Trubisky's averageness.
Which he's crept back to.
Crept back toward mediocrity. All right. The 4 o'clock game. Buffalo Bills at the Dallas Cowboys. I like this game. It's not flashy on paper because, you know, the Bills, they've got a great defense.
Mm-hmm.
I think it, I'm seeing people tweeting about, hey, do you guys still, people are taking victory laps over people not saying Josh Allen was a bust. Well, let's get into some.
What?
Right. People think Josh Allen's fantastic because they're winning and he is scoring some touchdowns. Like throwing some and rushing for some.
This entire right. season appears to have been just people waiting for the opportunity to take victory laps on everything.
And so the victory,
in fact, honestly, that's what Twitter seems to be now.
Oh man,
people just waiting for the chance to take a victory lap on anything.
I just saw somebody in the industry being like, "Well, look, Josh Allen. You know, he's turned out pretty good. I mean, I think he's become, other than the fact that he hasn't been accurate throwing the ball down the field, and he has been much better in the short game." Mm-hmm. The overall body of work, which is inconsistent, and the fact that they're winning is very dependent on the defense. And I even said he does have some of that high-end ability, which includes the rushing, where he could put up a ton of touchdowns, but the throw-for-throw efficiency still just isn't there, right? I am going to firmly stick with this is a 2017 Jags and 2018 Bears situation, which needs to be monitored closely. Josh Allen's development. He's done a lot of nice things this year, but I don't think we've answered any questions about his future this year for many.
No.
What did I just kick?
It's hard to tell. I know that. So you have to add in the rushing, right? Which is obviously an important part of this, but he is thrown for like 80 more yards than Gardner Minshew.
Obviously
hasn't played for stretches of the season.
Allen has 7 rushing touchdowns. He's been a threat with his legs. His fumbles have been a disaster. That's why the rushing grade's down. People are debating that in the comments. He's got the third most fumbles in the NFL, second most.
His passer rating is 86, which is it's like 1 point higher than Philip Rivers, who people are writing eulogies for. It's 6 points higher than Jared Goff, who is termed a disaster now.
It's below average.
Now, as I say, obviously it's well below average. Obviously you're dealing with
and he's 31st in PFF grades.
Yeah. So let's screen out some low level people. What did I say it was? 80. It's 26th. It's below Sam Darnold. It's below Daniel Jones, for God's sake, who's leading the league in turnover worthy plays since he's got into the game.
My whole thing when that whole draft class came out, Baker, Darnold, Lamar, and all that stuff. I mean, I know people want to make declarations here in year two, but my whole point when we said Baker was the top quarterback was, hey, Baker will probably have more of the top seasons of that class than any other guy. But in any given season, Darnold could be the best of that group and Lamar could be the best of that group. Just like if you look at the careers of Dak, Wentz, and Goff, that draft class, since they came in, Dak has been the best quarterback of that trio now probably 2 out of those 4 seasons. Wentz was the best quarterback out of that trio in 2017, and Goff was the best out of that group last year. Yeah. It's not just like, hey, let's stack them and that's going to remain the same.
The more you do, the longer you do this, the more you understand that none of these things are static.
Yeah.
Things change year on year.
Right.
And you can't lock anything in as, well, this is decided. Like right now, Lamar Jackson is playing insane football, right? He looks phenomenal. That offense looks unstoppable collectively. Yep. The idea that, so like people are not, last week, or coming off Monday Night Football, that beatdown the Ravens perpetrated, what everyone is now asking, well, Lamar or Patrick Mahomes? Yeah, I mean, come on, like, just let it breathe a little bit before we go completely off the deep end. Like, we just have not seen
that's
enough.
Our industry, though, Sam. That is our industry.
I know, but
it's the last thing we saw.
You know,
it
have
was
a little bit of self-awareness to understand how this works.
Imagine our industry work in the stock market.
No.
They would have been like, Bitcoin's higher than ever. I'm buying. Like, buy high, sell low. That's what they would do.
Yeah.
Like we did.
It's just, it's silly.
So that would be our industry.
So the Josh Allen thing is interesting because he has made really significant strides in certain areas. He has become significantly more accurate this year than last year and in college. Now, it's within certain parameters. As we've discussed before, he still can't seem to hit the broadside of a barn door deep, except last week
he finally connected had a nice pass with John Brown.
But that's been there all season, right? And he hasn't hit those.
Yep.
So he has taken a significant step forward. Our narrative with Josh Allen was always, look, there's a way for him to be good.
Yeah.
he can, you know, there's a potential for him to improve and get a lot better at these things. And if he does that, there's a way for him to be a viable, decent NFL quarterback. I think the jury's still out in terms of what exactly he is. He's taken enough steps towards that goal where, you know, we talked a few weeks ago about which teams are still happy with their quarterback situation. I think he's improved enough that the Bills would still be happy, right? They're looking at next year going,
oh, they're happy
because they're thinking of that linear development, right? It's
right,
like, where you start off here, we took a step forward here, next year we'll be here. One or two years down the line, we're talking about an all-pro right here.
Right.
Now, we know that it doesn't always go that way, but I think as long as people are taking those steps, I think it's fine to think that way. You know, I don't think it's necessarily a bad move to give credence to the idea that a guy can linearly get better year on year. So as long as Josh Allen is taking these steps in the right direction, I'm fine with the idea of saying, all right, he is the Bills franchise quarterback. They are winning games with him and the potential is there for him to get even better. But let's not act like he's already amazing because he isn't.
They just need to be aware. We've seen this story before where people said, okay, there it is, we're good, and, you know, handle some of the warning signs. All that said, Allen is entertaining because he can throw absolute lasers that show up.
Yes.
And just to back up that other point, too, about like in any given season, we have a season on record in 2016 when he was at Wyoming where he outgraded Josh Rosen. He outgraded he was up there probably, I think, with Lamar, and I think he was up there with Darnold. Like there was a season where a lot of things came together and his big playability was spectacular and all that stuff. But his draft year, he was the worst of the group.
Mm-hmm.
He was bad, you know, for a guy that was going in the first round.
Yeah.
But you take the whole body of work and it's like, all right, you could have some ebbs and flows here in Josh Allen's development. Anyway, I'm really looking forward to the matchup on the other side.
Yeah.
The Bills defense, we talk about their pass coverage all the time and just how fundamentally sound they are. And Tre'Davious White going up against the Cowboys and Amari Cooper. I just want to say, too, so Amari Cooper was shut out last week, mm-hmm. right? Didn't have a catch. And in New England, there's a big deal about, well, Stephon Gilmore shut down Amari Cooper, which he did for the most part. Like, technically, he was in coverage on Amari quite a bit, and Amari mm-hmm. had zero catches. There was a negated drag route for a first down.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was Dak's big throw, that fourth down, beautiful pass away from coverage that Amari easily could have caught.
Mm-hmm.
So even though we were the ones, we didn't start the coverage, like we pushed the coverage stats as much as anyone, please. The grade tells the story more than the coverage stats. Gilmore got beat multiple times and it was either negated by a penalty, Amari didn't catch the ball, or there was an overthrow. Dak had an overthrow and another one.
Right,
so
let's remember there was a driving rainstorm, which will help.
And there was a driving rainstorm
in your passing game.
So Stephon Gilmore is awesome.
Yes.
We love Stephon Gilmore.
The interception was amazing.
It was absolutely amazing. He's the highest graded corner in the NFL over the last 2 years. But let's not go crazy with this narrative. All that said, when you take Amari out of this offense, I know they had success a couple weeks ago when he was banged up, but you take him out, it puts a little bit more pressure on everybody else. Amari's been one of the best at beating single coverage. The Bills will mix it up zone and man, but when he does match up against Tre'Davious White, old SEC battle, it'll be a good one.
That will be a good one, and the other side will be good as well. Michael Gallup versus Levi Wallace.
Yeah.
The other side. This is a really fun matchup between this Bills defense that is so fundamentally sound, so good across the board, against this Dallas offense. It's been one of the best in the NFL this year, last week notwithstanding. Obviously, this week, they're going to be not in a driving rainstorm. It's inside. It's in the dome.
It's in the dome.
So that will help,
different.
Right? The offense should look back to its best. They're also unlikely to get two horseshit tripping calls.
Yeah, those are bad.
Yeah.
You might get, I would, like every time Mahomes plays in a dome, I'm like, oh, he's going to throw that 80-yarder to Tyreek. We might get Josh Allen unleashing one
on the
indoors
one.
Here. Yeah.
Throws it 90 yards to John Brown, who's 60 yards downfield.
Yeah, I mean, that's how you set the tone. First play, you throw it as far as you can.
Mm-hmm.
And really get it in Dallas's head that you got to cover the whole field.
Yeah.
Then they'll start playing Greg Williams safety, and then it's like 11 on 10.
Mm, okay.
Strategy.
But, I mean, that's what they should do against the Jets.
Like, actually, imagine Greg Williams. Bills are bad. It's up at the goal line. They get the safety right. at the
safety's
other 40.
Already 30 yards off the line of scrimmage. First play, let's uncork one 70 yards downfield. Make him play 40 yards off.
That.
Literally just take him off the field, essentially.
That'd be great. So if you're watching this game, Watch a little bit of the, just watch the Bills on the back end. They create tight windows. That's the thing, right? A good passing offense creates open throws. A good pass defense, tightens those windows and everything. That's where the battle's going to be, because the Cowboys have done a great job of creating open throws for Dak. The Bills have done a really nice job of just making life difficult on opposing offenses. Mm-hmm. That'll be a good battle to watch.
Yeah, I mean, this is a fascinating game. This is, I think, yeah, this is the most exciting one of the Thanksgiving slate to me.
Yeah, and the Bills have a tough stretch here. So a big game. They're coming in 8-3, and I think, everybody's out. Dallas, talent-wise, everybody's like, oh, they're 6-5. They should be better than that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Probably.
Yeah.
So, big game here. I'm going Dallas.
Same.
In this one. Good offense always beats good defense, and vice versa, as they say.
The other interesting matchup in this will be the Buffalo D-line against Dallas's offensive line. Because typically, good versus good, the pass protection wins. But Buffalo do have the ability to get after the passer. They've got enough horses up front to get pressure, but will they be able to?
And it's with few big names. Mm. Now they got Ed Oliver in first round, but it's not like he's dominating. He's been good. I mean, it's just a bunch of good up front. Guys like Shaq Lawson, contributing and all
Jerry
that stuff.
Jerry Hughes, Lorenzo Alexander. Like they've got enough guys that can get after the quarterback, but they're going up against one of the best units.
All right. And then after you've had your turkey,
mm-hmm.
and you're exhausted and you're tired, it's the Beached Whale Bowl.
Yeah.
It's the rematch. Saints at Falcons.
Three straight
dome games. There should be weather games on Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
We should see all these games outdoors. And
it's raining today.
Raining here.
Yeah.
In Cincinnati it is. Yes.
I might have been right about the beach whale thing. It's just that the explosion lasted a couple of weeks.
Oh, you think it's still alive?
Well, last week they went way back towards what they've been before. I'm just saying, just throwing it out there. Maybe it wasn't wrong.
Falcons held the Saints to 9 points.
Yeah,
how did that
happen? There's no way that happens twice, right?
It was just a weird game. So I used to always say, how do you stop Breeze or Brady or Peyton? Those guys, and now Rodgers. I mean, you just kind of show up and you can stop Rodgers now. Now, how do you stop those guys? And I don't think there was ever like a clear strategy to stop them. And I don't think there's no blueprints. Now, if people tell you the blueprint, all you have to do is get pressure with your front four 60% of the time. Well, okay, yes, you have to dominate a game up front, which defeats every quarterback. That's not called a blueprint. That's called just be better at this one thing.
Being better is quite a good blueprint to winning games.
It's a good blueprint. But I don't think there's any real strategy to beating those top elite quarterbacks when they're at their best. You almost have to hope, all right, you create a little bit of indecision that's usually not there. You kind of hope that they miss a few throws and all that stuff. I thought Breeze a few weeks ago was just a little off. The Falcons created enough indecision. Like, he took 5 or 6 sacks. That never happens with Breeze. He's decisive, quick passing game. He knows where to go. And if there's nobody open downfield, he'll find that check down as well as anybody. There was just enough indecision from Breeze a few weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
And you never see that at home, dome. We already said this is the only time in the Breeze era of the Saints that they scored fewer than 10 points at home.
Mm-hmm.
First time ever. Yeah, it's 2006.
As I say, that's not happening again.
So that's the big anomaly. Now you're going to Atlanta, which there's, dome and dome, whatever. It's another nice, easy place to chuck the ball around. I would expect more of a shootout here.
Yes. They got almost nothing out of their offense. And Atlanta scored 26. Yep. So this is more likely to come back to being, all right, now we're both in the 20s and we have a more interesting game.
And that's what these teams have been playing for years now, is like these high octane shootout type of games.
Now, I think one thing that was interesting in the last game that they had was the Falcons had some monster performances up front. Like Grady Jarrett was a game changer in that. They had one of those games where an individual matchup along the trenches, the offense and defensive line, can wreck a game plan, right? If you do nothing to change it. Grady Jarrett had one of those games where he was just wrecking Andres Pete every single snap and caused major problems. Now, you would assume, having seen that happen, they would make some adjustments. Maybe think about, you know, double teaming Grady Jarrett every now and again. The way, you know, we saw the Ravens against the Rams, Aaron Donald was double teamed almost every single snap. Now, Aaron Donald still got some wins, but it was more than enough to basically take him out of that game. The Saints really need to think about dedicating a little bit of resource to Grady Jarrett and just making sure that the reason they lose this game isn't because he is dictating the time Drew Brees has to throw.
Right.
I think that should be eminently attainable, and that should go a long way toward changing it.
Matt Ryan last week, at the time of recording the podcast, I think you threw out a turnover-worthy play number for Matt Ryan. I think it ended up at six. Six.
Ouch.
So Matt Ryan was, again, one of those guys through the years where you're like, I don't think there's no, we talked about him the other day, and I think it got headlined, is he finally in decline? We're just saying, hey, are there some warning signs here with Matt Ryan? Six turnover worthy plays. There was never a point in Ryan's game where you're just like, here's a weakness. Here's this weakness that shows up every week and it's got to be disguised. Like, he's pretty good at everything. Mm-hmm. He's had bouts in his career where he's been inconsistent on the deep ball. And you mentioned, you know, a little panicky under pressure at times. But again, it's one of those things that fluctuates, right? In 2016, when he was the MVP candidate, not only was Shanahan scheming it up great, but Ryan was great under pressure. Like, everything was going well. He does look like the O-line's in his head, and he's just not seeing things as clearly this season. All that said, he's still capable. He still throws beautiful timing routes at the intermediate level. He's still got Ridley to throw to. I know Julio's a little banged up, right? So there's a question there, but he's had weapons to throw to, and I will always believe that this passing offense is capable of handling themselves in a shootout, even with offensive line woes.
I mean, that was one of the more interesting things the last game, right? Is that Ryan had one of his better games under pressure in a while.
Yeah.
So I think if you look on paper, the Saints defensive front should have the advantage over Atlanta's offensive line. They should be able to get a significant amount of pressure. They pressured him last time, 16 out of 38 dropbacks, you know, about where you'd expect, enough to cause problems. Only usually this season, Matt Ryan has had real issues when he's been under pressure, but that game, he didn't. That game, he actually played fine under pressure, scored one of his touchdowns under pressure, and things weren't a disaster. Like, if the Saints get the same volume of pressure this time again, I think it will be a different story, just because Ryan hasn't really shown the ability to deal with it that well this season.
Julio did not practice on Tuesday, but as we say, every time these teams match up, if he's on the field, Julio versus Marshawn Lattimore is always, you know, when they're both healthy and on the field, is always a great matchup to watch. Anyway, this game, what are you expecting here?
I think it will swing back towards New Orleans. I just don't see a way that last time repeats itself, and I think fundamentally the Saints are better.
Yeah, that's where I'm going too. So we'll have the road team winning both.
Yeah.
So there we go. Let's get into the Sunday slate. Marshawn Lattimore is also limited. So the two guys that you just want to see one-on-one, see what happens if they show up to play. All right, let's get into Sunday slate, the biggest game of the weekend.
Coming off the Thanksgiving games, will we drop the promo code?
Oh, we got a promo code, yes,
yeah.
For PFF. Uh-huh. You guys have listened long enough.
Cyber
here it is.
Sale.
Cyber 40. Is the promo code. Sam, tell everybody what they're getting with the Cyber 40 promo code, which is good, what, through Cyber Monday?
It's good through Cyber Monday and maybe a little bit longer.
Yeah, sometimes we forget to take off the code. Right. And just keep trying it.
Yeah. So, limited time sale. Cyber 40 is the code. I'm not going to spell it out. You know how to spell Cyber 40. And if you don't, you probably don't deserve a PFF subscription.
You are not in our demographic if you don't know how to spell
cyber. Correct.
Yeah.
40% off all annual subscriptions. So whether it's Edge or Elite, it'll get you 40% off for the duration of the time that the code is working.
It's the annual subscription part that I love, because everybody's got their time of year where they decide, hey, I'm getting this PFF product. And a lot of time it's right before the season starts.
Right.
That's when most people buy. They're like, hey, I got a fantasy football draft coming up, or I need my premium stats. I need my grades showing up every single Monday morning, Monday afternoon. But if you just sign up today, you got it for the year. You'll have it for the draft guide, for training camp, for for the grades, for your fantasy draft, all that stuff. And then you just, you know, re-up next Thanksgiving-ish.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But get that 40% off for the year.
Annual is key as opposed to seasonal. You know, PFF subscriptions work 365 days from the day you buy it.
Yes.
Not runs through the end of the year and then you're done, right? It's not a calendar year. It's an annual thing from the moment you buy. So Cyber 40, it will run you through free agency. It'll run you through the draft. It'll run you through the majority of next season.
Yeah. So there you go. Cyber 40, 40% off Edge or Elite over at PFF.com. Now into the Sunday slate post-Thanksgiving, the biggest game of the weekend, San Francisco 49ers at the Baltimore Ravens. Can anybody shut down this Ravens offense? I thought the Rams would do a better job, especially at home, the way that really defense had been playing. That didn't work at all. And the Niners, are they the poster children for good defense is only dependent on the offense you're playing? They just shut down the Packers. They've done a great job this season, but the Ravens are just playing at a whole different level right now.
They are. I think we'll get we'll get a better answer to that question this week. This right now, this Baltimore offense looks pretty much unstoppable.
I'll say this too, by the way, when you do have that great elite defense and all that stuff, there is a difference when you're playing at home and on the road. So even our analytics guys who are like in the defense doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't matter. It's just, it's dependent on the offense. It's less dependent on the offense when you're at home. Like you do have an advantage if you're, say, New England or San Francisco right now playing at home. Traveling to Baltimore, though, that's going to be a challenge.
Yeah. I mean, so the last time the Baltimore defense ran up against a really good defense was when they played the Patriots, and it was like, oh, this is when it finally comes off the rails. The Patriots are averaging like 6 points against everybody else and 37 against the Ravens.
Right.
So, when you look at what the 49ers have on defense, that defense is legitimately nasty. It is as equipped as anybody to make a mess of this offense. On the other hand, this offense is laying waste to everybody in its path right now. And, you know, we said before, and it's only been reinforced after watching them just bury the Rams, I don't know what the game plan is anymore to stop Lamar. I don't know if you spend a week looking at this system and trying to work out what you should do to slow him down, I don't know what you'd come up with, because I don't think the only game plan we've seen really work in the last, like, you know, the last sort of season and a bit was that Chargers game plan in the playoffs where they went, you know, what was it, five safeties, just took all the linebackers off the field, put on speed, defended the run with speed.
But you know what?
And one up front.
That was it.
Right.
That was what won the game for them. It was Bosa, Ingram, Justin Jones. I mean, they had guys simply winning blocks up front.
That's a big part of it. But I don't think that game plan works anymore. Even if you do win up front, I don't think that game plan is going to function because Lamar is now too good as a passer. You can't just take away. So I think originally the game plan would be, all right, we get on speed. We make sure that he doesn't beat us on the ground with his speed and athleticism around the corner. We match speed with speed. We stop the run and we force him to win as a pocket passer. I think he can now. That's your problem, right? Now you're like, okay, now we're forcing him to be a pocket passer and he's going to win.
Well, so here's my thought on that, right? If the term speed doesn't slump, I think speed applies here.
That's not a phrase.
I just made it.
Okay.
That speed would explain speed why doesn't slump.
Huh.
All right. And you see this in the college game all the time. If you got a quarterback who can win with his legs and he's off a little bit as a passer and he could still add a ton of value in that given game, either as a design runner or scrambling. I think we're in more recent history, we've seen Lamar as an inaccurate quarterback. Now, has he improved? Yes. Is there still a chance that he's going to regress back a little bit? Sure. So if you're going to take your chances, I think you're still going to take your chances with him winning from the pocket. And if for some reason he has an off game, well, the Ravens still have that trump card to have him run, right? Which is, that's what makes them scary. But I think I would still rather take away, like, force them into drop back passing situations.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean,
we're talking lesser of two evils. This isn't saying Lamar can't do it anymore because you know, he has been fantastic throwing the ball this year.
Right. That's the key, is that it's the lesser of two evils. I think, and what I'm saying essentially rests on the premise of if he continues as he's currently playing. Right. Obviously, if he regresses at anything, that's how you, that's what you attack.
Different. Yeah.
But if he's playing the way he currently is, I don't know that there is a game plan to defeat him. So we were messing around with the PFF database the other day, and we're actually started by looking at offensive tackles, right? Because an NFL player had asked me how many true dropbacks pass sets does Ronnie Stanley have, right? Because his cover or his
breakdown right here.
Pass blocking numbers are absurd right now. What is he giving up, like 5 pressures in the season?
Yeah, not a lot.
It's ridiculous, right? A number that everyone else is like more than double, right? So an NFL tackle was asking me, hey, how many dropbacks does he actually pass protect for the way the rest of us do, right? With this offense. So we filtered out a bunch of things. You know, we tried to look at just straight dropbacks, you know, legitimate sort of 5-7 step drop, take out the quick game, all this kind of stuff.
Was it
right?
This guy?
Yes, it was.
Yeah.
So I started filtering out all that stuff, and actually it doesn't paint as bad a picture of him as you might expect. He's, you know, 40th, I think, in terms of number of those snaps, which is obviously way lower than a lot of people, but it's not like criminally off the scale to the point where it's massively warping his numbers. And critically, even if you limit things to just those snaps, he's like number one or number two in terms of PFF grade.
And actually, look at this as a percentage.
Right. No, I know. He was
him.
Yeah.
It was him.
So even if you limit it to that, now you can say that the frequency will influence the ones where he is left in that scenario. And that's a fair point. But bottom line is, I don't think it's a massive deal here. But what's interesting is when you apply that sort of filter set and you're essentially looking at just true sort of legitimate pass blocking snaps for tackle, you can kind of apply that to a quarterback and say, all right, in like true passing scenarios, right? Let's take out the quick game where you're massively influenced by the offense and what they scheme open. Let's take out complicated play action stuff where you're scheming stuff. Let's essentially remove Kyle Shanahan from the equation, right? In terms of what you're producing for a quarterback, and look at just what happens when the quarterback is asked to drop back and play quarterback. You would assume that Lamar Jackson, that's where he tumbles in terms of production.
Yeah.
But in terms of PFF grade, he's 5th this year on those sort of true, in inverted commas, passing snaps. So he has become a legitimately effective, dangerous, problematic pocket passer. So the original game plan,
to everything else,
in addition to being the most dynamic rushing threat arguably the league has ever seen, certainly since Michael Vick.
Yeah.
So the original game plan would be, all right, let's take away what he does on the ground. Let's stop this Baltimore running offense and take our chances with what he can do through the air. Because to be honest, it hasn't been great. We think we can win that way. Now, what he's been doing through the air has been great. And we don't, like, you can't win that way anymore because he will beat you.
Yeah.
Interestingly, names that he is above in those true passing set grades: Patrick Mahomes, Russell Wilson, MVP Russell Wilson, Tom Brady, Dak Prescott. Basically, every quarterback you think right now is playing at an MVP level. Lamar is a higher grade in when you look at, you know, theoretically true quarterback passing snaps.
Yeah, it's been impressive. And, you know, this started, like you said, looking at Ronnie Stanley. And I think there is this element, too, and we saw this when Johnny Manziel was coming out of Texas A&M. Everybody was mush rushing him. They were so worried about losing contain that Jake Matthews and Luke Jokel, his two bookend tackles, looked really good because they were going up against pass rushers who weren't really even trying to get by them. And Lamar has some of that too. So even if it's like Ronnie Stanley has a bunch of true pass sets and everything, how many people are still scared of Lamar breaking contain and they're not really getting after it? But either way, the Ravens have the number one pass blocking grade, which I do believe we can account for a lot of things. We can't account for every last factor. So that's probably influenced a little bit by the Lamar factor, actually.
And the bottom line is, for the purposes of this kind of conversation, it doesn't matter. Like whether he's not under pressure because the offensive line is so good, or whether he's not under pressure because teams are effectively scared to rush him, it doesn't matter. He's not under pressure. So he's sitting there in a pocket that's not under pressure.
Yeah, right.
And can then therefore pick you apart.
Now, at the same time, while we always say he's more than willing to go through progressions, he's not looking to scramble. There are certainly plays in every game where he holds the ball too long, tries to do too much, and he will take some sacks and, you know, various things that aren't really on the line. And that where you, I mean, if you are trying to slow Lamar, can you take away the first and second read, which is that's not a game plan. Mm-hmm. That's just being good again.
Yeah.
Can you cover really, really well so he has nobody to throw to?
Yes.
And if you could do that, he'll hold it and maybe take a sack if you play contained properly. If you don't play contained properly, then nice job covering those first two reads, but he just ran for 20. That's part of the issue.
I will also say that there are trends within his sort of game plan or within his play in these things that you can at least focus on certain areas. So he has one of the lowest percentages of throws past the sticks in those scenarios.
Yeah.
So that right there is telling you at the very minimum, let's crowd the underneath.
Oh, short game has, yeah.
Right.
I would still rather him hit those passes over the top. And, you know, if it's Marquise Brown, a little scarier, but beyond that, you know, that's Boykin again, and tight ends, like they don't have the best deep threats in the world.
That's what makes this offense so scary, right? Is that everything is effectively everything you want to focus on exposes something else that isn't just a problem, but is an immediate danger to score seven. So,
yeah,
right. Either you don't focus on his rushing threat, in which case he takes off from the pocket, breaks five tackles, scrambles for 70 yards and scores, right? Bad. Okay, let's take away the running threat. Now he's capable of carving you up as a passer. Okay, fine. He typically focuses on the short game. Let's take that away. Crap, Marquise Brown just went 60 for a touchdown. Right. Like, this offense is just carving people to ribbons. And I don't know that there is a good game plan to slow them down anymore.
To go back to the Ravens coaching as well, too. I mean, our analytics guy's raving about how well Harbaugh has made the right decision, gone for it on fourth down. We saw it the other night in the Rams game. It's just like fourth and four, going for it. Fourth and eight, going for it. Whatever it is, right? We're just going to keep on the defense, right? Keep the pressure on. But they are winning on the margins in areas like that, in areas like just putting Marquise Brown in the slot to create vertical threats by passing to tight ends a little bit more, by running a lot of play action. They're winning on the margins and putting the whole team in successful
It's positions. Such a huge factor, right? Because for most teams, you only have to concern yourself with getting to fourth down. It's like, whew, we survived third down.
Yeah, stop now, celebrating third down stops.
Right, we survived third down. They're going to punt the ball away. We're good, right? Yeah. We stopped them this drive. With the Ravens, it's like we survived third down, but they're going to go for it. So we got to do it again.
Yeah.
Like, you have to actually survive four downs against this offense, which is harder to do because it's one of the best offenses in the NFL. Now, if we accept, so there's no game plan to beat this team, but we are going up against one of the best defenses in the NFL. Now, if the 49ers are going to slow them down, I think it's not going to be because they have a magic blueprint to slow them down. I think it's because they have one of the best defenses in the NFL.
Yeah. I mean, so here's the thing, by the way, a year ago at this time, we were talking about the Ravens game plan, especially when they go up against the Kansas City Chiefs.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they can run the ball, they can sit on it, they can have that 10 minute drive, and they can keep the ball away from you. Like, that was their game plan and strategy.
Yeah.
Until we realized just how explosive they could be.
Uh-huh.
Now, do the Niners have to play that keep away style?
I mean, I think
against the Ravens.
Yeah, I think that's always part of any. So we said this all last year at the Chiefs, right? Anytime you're playing an offense that is just a wrecking machine, part of your game plan to beat them, I think, has to be to keep the ball away from them.
Yeah.
Because one, the less they have the ball, the less damage they can do. But two, I think it genuinely frustrates those teams when they're sitting on the sideline, and that causes mistakes. And in when you're playing those kind of games, particularly if it's a shootout, just causing enough mistakes to steal a possession somewhere is huge. But this 49ers defense overall, right? Second overall in terms of PFF grade as a unit, second overall in coverage grade behind only the Patriots, third overall in pass rush grade. They're good in all the areas that you need to be good at. And by the way, between the sort of coverage and the pass rush, if Fred Warner has a game like he had last week where he's just everywhere, 9 defensive stops.
Warner and Jimmy Ward.
Huge.
Jimmy Ward was flying downhill too. So if you mm-hmm. you talk about the the short passing game, which has been extremely efficient for the Ravens. When Seattle's defense was at their best,
those two are vital.
Yes. When Seattle's defense was at their best, the scheme gives up completions, but then the yards after the catch are you know, it's nothing. Mm-hmm. It's Cam Chancellor flying down. It's Bobby Wagner flying to the ball. KJ Wright. If the Niners continue to play that style and Jimmy Ward becomes a key player working downhill in the box and they can limit yards after the catch, make the, so then you've got the extra man in the box to maybe defend the run, but you also kind of make the Ravens need to take a few more shots over the top. And, you know, Sherman's still difficult to throw the ball down the field on. Kelo Witherspoon. I mean, they, you know, I think that's part of the game plan there for the Niners.
They have six players with double digit total pressures. But I think critically, so D Ford has been banged up. He's missed some time. D Ford has 25. If you assume that D Ford played a representative amount of snaps, basically if he wasn't hurt, they would have four guys with more than 30 total pressures. So that's a pretty high figure so far this season and essentially illustrates that they can get pressure consistently just with their front four, which is huge, right? The 49ers for years have had those interior guys and they've all been able to get pressure. They've had no edge rush. Now they've got edge rush and they've got it on both sides. So if they can get after Lamar consistently, that's a big part of it. If they can do it without losing contain, that's another big part of it. Simply getting pressure will help that back end. The coverage has been fantastic. I mean, I just think top to bottom, this is one of the most fascinating matchups of the week.
It's going to be great. I really think, I think Baltimore ultimately gets the better of the Niners defense. If it was in San Francisco, that would be really a strength against strength. I just think that the road, you know, going on the road is hard. There's a phrase that defense travels. I don't think it does.
Okay. I agree with you that I don't know that there's anybody that can stop this Ravens offense the way it's playing right now. The problem is, so that then shifts focus to the other side, right? So if Baltimore is going to put up a ton of points, now you're asking the 49ers to match, and I don't think they can. The other part of all this is that Baltimore's defense is suddenly cooking on gas.
They've been fantastic. Marcus Peters is great. I mean, now
that might be less sustainable than the offense, but the fact that it's happening is why they're blowing teams out of the water instead of just winning.
But for the 13th week in a row, I'm going to say, look, they built it back to front.
Yeah.
And the back seven, the coverage unit is helping win. I mean,
I will say that they have players that gamble more than a lot of teams. And Kyle Shanahan schemes things up to put you in positions you're not supposed to be in. So Marcus Peters had another pick this week where he, an interception on a play he wasn't supposed to be there on, which is like his specialty.
Right.
You know, he was supposed to essentially be dropping on the sideline, splitting two zones, and instead just went, nah, to hell with that. I can see the one you're going to. I'm just heading to this.
Yeah.
So it was one of those plays where the quarterback, you know, everyone's going to be like, that's a terrible throw by Goff. Like, honestly, Peters just has no business making that play. He shouldn't be there.
That should be part of the game plan, knowing though Marcus Peters is on this side
this
of the field. He could be in a place where he's not.
Well, A, he could be in a place where he's not, but also...
But you could...
We can manipulate him, right? Yep. And I think the same thing is true for Earl Thomas. Earl Thomas has a propensity to gamble a little bit.
Yep.
Or at least commit very early to a read. So I think the way Kyle Shanahan shifts that offense around with play action, with fakes, with all this kind of stuff. I mean, we saw what he did last week in terms of busting George Kittle wide open over the middle of the field. He can shift those players around a bit. Now, he's going to need to do it a lot because they may have to win a shootout, but that could be a couple of big plays here.
I don't have the exact history of Kyle Shanahan against the quote-unquote cover three teams, but in 2016, when they went on that run, the Falcons, Matt Ryan's MVP season, they torched the Seahawks that year. And it wasn't just, like, the Seahawks were already regressing a little bit defensively, but this was like they were scheming it up against that system extremely well. So that makes, you know, Shanahan, when he goes up, not that the Ravens are this pure cover three system, but like he's had these games where he schemed it up against really good defenses and made them look bad. So, man, it's going to be a good matchup. I'm going Baltimore at home.
Same.
All right, let's go. Maybe not spend as much time on certain games like Jets at Bengals.
Yeah, no, I think so.
The Ginger Bowl.
Dalton's back.
There was always going to be a Ginger Bowl.
Finley. The hometown Bengals are going to take it upon themselves to try and get their way out of the number one overall pick because that's what we do here.
They want Andy back there. Well, yeah. I'm going to defer to, you know, my wife's take on this whole thing. Kelly, okay. She said, look, you can't build a losing culture, right?
Yeah, you keep saying that.
You can't build a losing culture.
You're already, like, it's not like they were winning with Dalton back there.
It's so tough. I mean, look, the human element of this thing, when you're Zach Taylor and you roll in to the locker room and you're like, all right, guys, we're trotting Ryan Finley out there. Like, He is clearly not the best quarterback on the team right now.
Right.
Okay.
But the one that was the best also lost all of his games.
Fine. But it's just...
So what part of the winning culture is Andy bringing to the table?
A shot to win. He's got a better shot to win.
Right, but right now he's winless.
He's got a better shot to win than Finley. Like,
sure.
They could have won that game against... If Dalton was in last week against the Steelers, the Bengals had a shot to win.
Yeah.
A lot better shot to win. It is so tough. I have no problem with the Ryan Finley experiment. I have zero problem with it. Put him out there. See if there's glimmers of hope or whatever it is. But at some point, you see no glimmers of hope, and it's like, all right, I cannot look my players in the face and say, go follow our second best quarterback.
The NFL to me is so different year to year that I just don't think it matters. Like, sure.
It also probably doesn't matter, but we need something to talk about.
It might impact this year, right? If you actively go out there and say, yeah, you know what? We're 0-10. We're probably not looking for this year. We're looking a bit beyond. So we're going to trot out Ryan Finley, and he looks terrible. So you're just going to have to suck it up and play a few games. But the bright side is we'll get the number one overall pick. We'll get Joe Burrow. We'll be able to revolutionize the franchise next year. And if any of you guys are still around, it'll be beautiful, right? If you're not, thanks for trying. Bye-bye now.
I could also do that too.
I don't think that essentially saying we're 0-10, we're going to tank the rest of the year because what is in it for us to win would impact next year. If you achieve what you're trying to achieve, which is snagging a franchise quarterback, which turns things around. I just don't think that there's any kind of lingering effect of 6 games of not trying your hardest to win. And by that, it's not even like a deliberate, I'm not even saying go out there and try to lose the game, right? I'm just saying we put a guy out there that doesn't give us the best chance to win because at the very minimum, we want to see if he has any long-term future. And if the answer to that is no, fine. We haven't lost anything. In fact, we've moved a step towards the better long-term future, which is securing the best player in the draft or the best player in the draft that matters at a position we need.
Yeah.
So I'm not buying the idea that it fosters a losing culture beyond 2019. And honestly, a losing culture is what you want for 2019 because the only thing that matters anymore is securing the number one overall pick.
Yeah, I don't know if the number one overall pick even means that much. Just have a bunch of picks.
Well, yeah, but it matters if there's one legit quarterback and
yeah,
you need
him. You'd like to have your choice.
Yeah.
Seen some of Burrow's numbers?
I've seen some of them.
He's completing 78%+ of his passes.
Mm-hmm.
78. That's insane.
Yeah, I mean, Renner
and
had...
not a dink and dunk.
Right, Renner put out some stats a while ago that was like, I think it was completion percentage on a certain...
10-plus yards.
Yeah, depth, and he's like 10% higher than anybody we've ever seen.
Yeah.
Including Baker.
Right.
You know,
like 68% on 10-plus yard throws.
Yeah.
His pure accuracy percentage, our ball location stuff, he's at 76.
Yeah.
We've seen Brady and Breeze like right up around 70 in their best NFL seasons in this number.
Mm-hmm.
Burrow's at 76.
Yeah.
And we've seen a couple college guys in like the high 60s, all dink and dunk type of mm-hmm. offense. It's just insane.
Yeah. So that's why I'm saying you might want to snag that number one overall pick.
All right. So there you go. How about Jamal Adams, the best pass rusher on the Jets going up against this Bengals offensive line?
Yes.
There's your matchup.
It really is.
So watch there. Sam Darnold's playing much better football in recent weeks. I think it's, again, in this hot take culture, like I said, you want to overreact to every single game. Now he's better. Now, like, I want to see him string together a stretch here at the end of the season where he doesn't have that big drop off.
That would be nice. Then we can ride all those kind of narratives about how Sam Darnold is the second half of the year player.
Yeah, second half of the year quarterback.
Right. That'll be the
sample size stuff's very important.
Yes.
To just push that stuff. I'm taking the Jets.
Same. By the way, so Jamal Adams, not only does he lead the team in sacks, but he's like eight pressures, or was it eight or nine or 11 or something? He's a limited number of pressures away from leading the team in pressures as well.
On only like
68, I think, pass rushes.
Yeah, it's great. Yeah, he's a fun player to watch.
He's genuinely their best pass rusher. If they lined him up as an outside linebacker edge rusher every single play, they would be markedly better off
from a
pass rush standpoint.
It's hard enough to find a Jamal Adams or a Derwin James, but what if a defense could somehow secure two guys just like that?
So here's the thing, right? I think genuinely teams should start thinking about this as a strategy. Jamal Adams is, what is he from a height weight standpoint? 6 foot, 213 pounds, right? Shaquem Griffin is 6 foot.
227.
No.
With his little
Pete gut. Carroll came out on the radio and said he's playing at 215 right now.
Well, yeah, because he.
Well, yeah, because 227 was an attempt to put on weight, and essentially he just developed the pot belly. So he is playing at 215, right? He is essentially playing outside linebacker, edge rusher at exactly the same size as Jamal Adams is.
Yeah.
Those two guys are both effective right now. I went through all of Shaquem Griffin's pass rushes. What's interesting, we're still crazy small sample sizes, right? So it's difficult to draw actual conclusions from this. But he is drawing double teams at a pretty crazy rate right now. Ben ran the numbers for me. I can't remember what the exact figure was, but he is drawing double teams, and by that I mean typically chip blocks at this point.
Right.
Drawing chip blocks at a rate significantly higher than most players. And I don't know if that's a conscious thing that teams are like, well, this guy has speed and speed alone, so we're just going to make sure he doesn't run right through hell around our offensive tackle. So we'll throw a chip at him. That'll help, right? Or if it's just a freak of alignment over, 30 rushes or whatever it is so far. Entirely possible. But when you put on his tape, he is able to beat guys still. He's got speed. He's able to win with quickness. He's got a bit of power to him as well. One of those final rushes this past week, he sort of got an inside move, got a shoulder in front, and just drove his way through the gap. Now, there's definitely plays where the tackle gets locked onto him and he just gets buried. Like Mike McGlinchey wrecked him a couple of times where he got a grip and it was just game over. But my point is...
But we're also of the minds that how badly you lose doesn't matter. That
exactly, much, right? So my point essentially is these guys, these pure speed rushers in obvious passing situations, which happen more now than they ever used to, are legitimately dangerous edge rushers. And you should probably think about deploying a couple of them because... I think these guys cause more problems for offensive tackles than just a worse 260-pound edge rusher. If you don't have a top-tier pass rusher, I think these guys cause more problems than just a worse version of a top-tier pass rusher. So my point is use them. Throw them out there. If you have a guy that you think is physically capable of doing that, line them up. What have you got to lose?
Yeah. I mean... Run game stuff, probably.
But it's like obvious passing downs. That's what I'm saying, right? Shaquem Griffin has played almost every single snap has been an obvious pass rushing situation, and he hasn't had to defend the run. So who cares?
Oh, I'd be off. I mean, absolutely.
I'm just saying you should start experimenting with crazy light, crazy fast edge rushers because most offensive tackles are hulking, lumbering, lumps. Yeah. They're not going to deal with that speed.
So we're taking the Jets.
Yeah.
All right. Tennessee Titans at the Indianapolis Colts.
Yet another Titans game that is just impossible.
Have the Titans settled in as consistent now, though, with Ryan Tannehill at the helm?
I would say probably not, because they're the Titans. It's worth noting, though, that Ryan Tannehill is playing the best football of his career since, year two.
Yeah.
And it's worth noting that in year two... We were very optimistic about what he could be. This idea of constant linear progression, the Josh Allen theory, as it currently is, that was Tannehill back in 2013. And then obviously the wheels fell right the hell off and Ryan Tannehill went in the tank, as did Miami. And I was like, well, this guy's useless. He can now back up Marcus Mariota.
Tannehill always, the thing that was always missing with Tannehill, we always say if you just watch this guy's best throws, but even throw for throw, Tannehill's like short area accuracy was nice. Intermediate stuff was beautiful. He had an inconsistent deep ball, but it was more like the situational stuff. Like the same way you expect a Brady or Russell Wilson or whoever, Breeze, to like lead the team back in the fourth quarter or make the key throw on third down or make a tight red zone throw when they need it. Tannehill was never good in the red zone. He was never good fourth quarter comebacks. Like he was never good at the stuff that just the best quarterbacks. I don't even know if the best quarterbacks elevate the game. They're better, so they're better at all those situations as well. Tannehill always seemed to be lacking in that area. Mm-hmm. But overall, throw for throw was like pretty reasonable. I would say he does look a little cleaner in a lot of those situations right now. Like late game against the Chiefs, he's making big plays and, you know, picking up rushing first downs or touchdowns with his legs when needed, running through defenders when needed. I mean, he is doing a really nice job in some of the situational stuff, as well as just being a very good intermediate thrower and all that stuff. And don't forget, like I said, we're a year removed from him being pretty bad.
Yeah. Yeah.
Statistically was not, but he had all of his touchdowns on screens in Miami Miracle. And
it wasn't just last year. Like he'd
fumble
been heading,
issues, pocket presence, terror, like everything was bad.
He'd been heading that way for a while. Like things were getting worse and worse. Now he was injured as well, so that's part of it. But he'd been heading in the wrong direction and getting to the point where he was pretty bad for a while. So it's definitely a bounce back and arguably, you know, not one that you expect to continue. It's an anomaly potentially, or it's him getting back to where he could have been if Miami hadn't been such a disaster.
I think I want to take Tennessee. I took Indy.
Too
late to switch.
AJ Brown has a top 10 yard per route run figure in the entire NFL.
He's been fantastic.
Are you at all sad that he is what Corey Davis was supposed to be?
Yeah, maybe. I don't think because AJ Brown is just dynamic after the catch too. I wasn't expecting that from Corey. I was expecting Corey Davis not to be Michael Thomas, but to be more that style of receiver, a guy that's just consistently open all the time, short and intermediate level. AJ Brown has this dynamic after the catch ability, can win a little bit more consistently at all levels. I mean, it's been a nice
players
addition.
That AJ Brown has a higher yard per route run figure than so far. Mike Evans, Chris Godwin, Adam Thielen, Cortland Sutton, Tyler Lockett, Terry McLaurin, anybody on the Browns, DeAndre Hopkins, like, he has been incredibly productive when they've had him on the field, and they appear to be starting to realize that. Like, he's featuring more now than he has in the past, and yeah, he looks genuinely dangerous. He looks like a significant threat.
So it's another game where Jacoby Brissett's going up against a quarterback that we have graded better than him, mm-hmm. and I really just think the Colts offense, again, has done a nice job of, you know, creating offense. But at some point, we got to see more consistency from Brissett, and it just puts a lot of pressure on the Colts and the rest of their roster to pick things up. But they're very evenly matched teams, right? Just two teams, solid across the board, pretty good quarterback play, not great quarterback play unless you have the high end of Tannehill from the last few weeks. So they're just very, very close across the board here.
Yeah, so this is an interesting one because, again, it's like it's a replay of a game that's already taken place, but the last time it took place was week two and Marcus Mariota was the quarterback.
Yeah.
So this Titans team is different than the one we saw the last time. And it was a close game.
The Colts escaped.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
It was more of an escape. That was when the Titans had scored 40 against the Browns and they come back and lose 19-17.
Mm-hmm.
And that, you know, Titans had plenty of chances
to
win. And it felt like the Colts escaped.
Right.
Game with a win.
So it was in Tennessee, though, as opposed to this one's in Indy, right? So, it's an interesting matchup. Again, like all Tennessee games, it's impossible to call. And doubly so because it's within the division. Within the division.
All right.
That being said, I went with the Colts.
Yeah, I've gone with the Colts, but I think by press time, so to speak.
By press time.
It might become Tennessee. I'm ready to talk. Tannehill in a dome. He's going to tear it up.
Okay. All right.
He didn't throw the ball that well last year at Indy in the dome. Anyway, quick break to tell you about our friends over at Western and Southern. It doesn't matter if it's football or financial wellness. The right questions will always give you the best chance for a win. Western and Southern has partnered with us here at PFF to give you a chance for an up close and personal look at the X's and O's that'll lead to both financial and football success. If you're looking for insight on your financial future, or if you need an inside the huddle tip, head to westernsouthern.com/askchris. westernsouthern.com/ask-chris, C-R-I-S, to ask Western and Southern and PFF your most pressing questions. You could even win tickets to the big game. All you have to do is ask Chris a question and you can win tickets.
Yeah.
His office is right upstairs. I can go ask him a question and then I'm like in the...
I don't think that qualifies. I think it's got to be through the system. You got to go to that link.
So I'm going to do it right now. westernsouthern.com/ask-chris. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Chris, can I have tickets?
That's to- Chris, C-R-I-S. Because there are people that don't know how to spell his name.
There's many Chris Collinsworth folks that yes. don't spell his name right.
Including people like trying to do business with him, which always strikes me as kind of funny. You think, you know, the very minimum, if you're trying to get a deal done, let's learn how to spell his name.
Yeah, you'd want to get that right.
I would.
All right, let's go Cleveland Browns at the Pittsburgh Steelers. Another division rematch.
Feisty. The Myles Garrett Revenge Bowl.
Nothing's going to happen, right?
Now with Duck. Now with added Duck.
They're going to be cracking down on it.
The Steelers are starting a guy called Duck.
I don't trust Duck.
At quarterback. I don't trust Duck either.
He had one nice throw.
Which is one more than Mason Rudolph had.
Yeah. He had one nice throw for the long touchdown, which, you know, essentially won them the game.
So here's the thing, right? Somebody was asking during the week, like, who's worse, Ryan Finley or Mason Rudolph? I was like, well, so they've both been playing pretty terribly, but one guy has zero shot to achieve anything in the offense he's in, and the other guy has one of the best situations in the NFL in terms of, you know, good offensive line, decent receiving weapons. So, you know, that I think sways what you think. So the Steelers have benched Mason Rudolph. Duck comes in. Duck is probably not very good at all. But Duck has one of the better situations any quarterback has to work with. Kind of like the Jacoby Brissett thing in Indy, right? He's got a really good defense. He's got a good offensive line. He's got some weapons to work with. Like, Duck is stepping in.
The weapons are okay. I wouldn't say it's one of the best, but...
No, I'm not saying it's one of the best, but they're good, right? Yeah. The situation is one of the best, of which the receivers being decent are a part of it. So my point generally is that I think Duck has an awful lot to work with. But guys, How are we honestly calling a guy Duck unironically?
It's Devlin, right?
That's silly. Yeah, but the broadcast and everybody calls him Duck.
I call him Devlin.
You should, because Duck is ridiculous.
Definitely want to see that trench battle, the pass rush with Watt and Dupree and what the Steelers do up front. Want to see if Baker can keep, he's played much better in recent weeks, if he can keep some of that rhythm. He flashed against the Steelers in the Thursday night game and then was more inconsistent. Like, let's put together a full game and see what that looks like. But yeah, the Browns, we mentioned the other day, could end the season at 9-7. And for them to do that, they have to win this game.
Yeah, I mean, this was one of the most impressive Browns performances, right? Now, okay, it didn't last the whole game. But early in this game, Baker looked in rhythm again. This was the start of the positive signs.
Yeah.
Baker looked really good early in this game. They got out to a lead and they were able to strangle it. Outside of Akello Witherspoon, Denzel Ward has the lowest completion percentage allowed this season, 41% of targets.
That's pretty good.
Isn't it?
Yeah, and he looked like he had some blips early in the season, but
yeah, and again, so he's another one of those guys, zero interceptions. So box score people are like, yeah, not playing well. Seven pass breakups, just 41% of passes thrown his way to be caught. He's allowed, 256 yards this season. So yeah, I think he's playing pretty well.
All right, where are you going with this one?
Browns?
I'm taking the Browns as well.
Yes, Browns.
Man, I'm just not buying into the Steelers.
No, haven't been all year. I do think they
their
have
defense is playing really well.
I do think they have a better chance to win with Duck than Rudolph.
Well, the way Rudolph played the last 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Certainly. Philadelphia Eagles at the Miami Dolphins.
This feels like a game that doesn't take a huge amount of analysis.
It does not. We're going to go quicker on this one. So the Eagles have their beat up wide receiver core. Their Wentz has been rough. The receiver, everything's been rough. The passing game there,
rough.
Just been bad.
Here's the thing, right? The Eagles still have one of the best pass rushers in the NFL, and Miami has one of the worst offensive lines in the NFL. That alone means that the Eagles cannot lose this game. The end. Case closed. Next.
Did we make our Brandon Graham bet?
No, we didn't. I gave you multiple opportunities to do it, and you still wouldn't do it.
He's at 8 sacks, and he's going
to play the Dolphins.
He's got 4. Right.
Yeah, you really screwed up.
We're both taking the Eagles.
Yeah.
Green Bay Packers at the New York Giants. And the Packers get back on track.
Yes, because I am officially done with Daniel Jones after he screwed me against the Bears last week.
So we're both taking the Packers. I mean, the Packers are coming off two out of their last three games, right, against the Chargers and the 49ers, where it was just the offense was as bad as it gets, especially with Rodgers at the helm. But I think they have a chance with the Giants on the schedule, the Redskins on the schedule to kind of change the narrative over these next few weeks heading into the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, they got annihilated by the 49ers defense. The Giants defense is not that. So I think they've got a real chance to get back on track. You know, Rodgers had the worst game. What was the number you pulled out? It was his worst game ever?
Worst game ever. 37.9 grade, I believe. His average depth of completion was less than a yard.
Yeah, it was negative.
I'm sorry, was negative yards.
It was behind the line of scrimmage.
Behind the line of scrimmage. He had 20 completions for like minus 0.1 per completion.
Yeah.
Now, granted, he had a drop beyond the line of scrimmage. He had that pass that was almost hauled in the back of the end zone by Valdes-Scandling. I mean, there's other factors here, but I think that sums things up.
Yes.
That was bad. So the Packers got to figure out that rhythm offensively. You know, and then the Daniel Jones coaster, you know, he might make some big plays. He might turn the ball over. If he makes some big plays, then we've got one, you know, we might have a shootout situation going here.
Yeah.
DeAndre Baker had his best game last week.
He actually
didn't bust coverages and made some tackles.
So we talked about the 49ers having, you know, the second best overall defensive grade, the second best overall coverage grade. The Giants are 29th in coverage grade. So as much as the Aaron Rodgers to insert Green Bay receiver has been an issue this year, it should be dramatically easier against the Giants.
We're both taking the Packers in this one. Washington Redskins at the Carolina Panthers. I just want to see Luke Kuechly at the line of scrimmage with the rookie Dwayne Haskins across the line.
So I am interested to see. Last week it came out and it was like, well, my hand or wrist was banged up. That's why I couldn't get the ball near Terry McLaurin. What was interesting is that he did take some shots last week in a way we haven't necessarily seen before. Now, I'm still not entirely convinced he'll do that if the coverage is tighter, because one characteristic of the shots he was taking is that, frankly, not to have taken those shots would have been, you know, it would have been an offense that was worthy of benching. If we just stepped into like a hurricane, what is happening?
I don't know. We're in a bomb shelter. I think we're safe if there is something going on out there.
Okay. So, you know, if he hadn't taken the shots that he'd taken last week, it would have been worth benching him because of it. Like, they were so wide open that if you hadn't thrown the ball at that point, you would have been like, what the hell are you doing? Sit down. We're putting Keenum out there. So there's only a limited degree to which you can credit him for that, is what I'm saying, particularly as he didn't complete them. But the fact that he was taking them was positive. And so I'm curious to see if that continues this week, because McLaurin is a superstar. He is honestly one of the best wide receivers in the NFL already, and he'll have some opportunities if Haskins is willing to attack it and if he can actually get the ball to him.
Yeah, we talked about the other day. I mean, it was Luke Kuechly played well. Everybody else got torched against that Saints defense offense. So just want to watch Luke, and you know, more of the Kyle Allen. Let's figure out what he is. He'll have some opportunities against a not as good.
Still on Will Greer watch?
I guess. I think it's a Kyle Allen show the rest of the year. We're both taking Carolina in this one. And a quick break to tell you about our favorite friends. Support for PFF NFL podcast comes from Manscaped. The best in men's below-the-belt grooming. Manscaped offers precision-engineered tools for your family jewels, as you know.
Yes, they do.
Sam, jingle balls to the walls. Fellas, listen up. It's actually better if I awkwardly read it.
Can I be a little bit disappointed that there is no Thanksgiving themed?
Let's make our own.
Balls pun.
Let's make our own.
Yeah? What do you got? Turkeys? Turkeys have got to be in there somewhere.
Trim your giblets with...
Giblets. They're giblets, surely.
Giblets. Giblets.
I'm GIF. Sure it's giblets.
GIF.
No, it is GIF because you can just change the... But I'm pretty sure it's giblets.
Just either way, keep them trimmed with Manscaped.
I'm not sure you can make a giblets pun when it comes to below the belt grooming.
Manscaped is going to give you 20% off plus free shipping with the code PFF over at manscaped.com. So what do you get over at manscaped.com? You get the revolutionary Lawnmower 2.0.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You always pose the question, what went wrong with 1.0? Is it like a video game? Like you just make it a little bit better every single year?
That's the thing. It's all iterative, right? Madden, there was nothing wrong with Madden 19. We upgraded.
Yeah, you get to the next one.
We got a year ahead. We made some changes, some improvements.
So the Lawnmower 2.0 has proprietary advanced skin-safe technology, so this trimmer won't nick or snag
your giblets.
Your giblets. It's also waterproof, so you can use it in the shower. And it all comes inside the perfect package 2.0,
mm-hmm.
The perfect gift for this holiday season, whether you're celebrating Thanksgiving or Christmas or Hanukkah or any other holiday. It is the perfect gift because you've got the crop preserver and all sorts of other goodies.
Ball deodorant.
Yeah.
Everybody wants the gift of ball deodorant this Christmas.
Yeah. I mean, we go to the Y every day. It smells pretty bad in there.
It does. Yeah. It does. Particularly as they stop turning on the showers.
We should buy some Manscaped for all of our friends at the gym.
Yeah.
In the locker room.
It's genuinely, I think, a good Christmas gift, right? Not because, you know, nothing says Christmas like shaving your nuts, but because the sort of packaging and the whole thing that it comes in, you know, with the little newspaper thing with comedy stories,
yeah,
and that kind of stuff. Like, it's genuinely good.
So it's like a real product, but it's also a good spoof gift as well.
Right. Like, well, not just spoof, but entertaining. Right?
Entertaining, right? It's you not get, a spoof because yeah, it's real.
You get this sort of newspaper thing that has these pretty hysterical stories about it in it.
Yeah.
It comes in, you know, really nice packaging. The wash bag that it comes in is legitimately really nice.
How many of these do you think are going to show up in the office Secret Santa?
A lot. Right. Everybody's getting ball deodorant for Secret Santa.
So if you guys are doing Secret Santa and you want a great gift, manscaped.com, you get 20% off plus free shipping. Promo code is PFF over at manscaped.com. That's 20% off free shipping. PFF's the promo code, manscaped.com. Clean your nuts and make Santa proud this year.
Mm-hmm,
that's
mm-hmm.
what they tell us.
They do. They do. Look, honestly, the bottom line is your giblets deserve it.
Or giblets.
No, not giblets.
Your balls will thank you. Manscaped.com. Speaking of balls, Bucks at Jags. That's not a transition.
Speaking of balls.
That has nothing to do with anything.
No, it doesn't.
Oh, the Bucks
at
the Jags.
Did you see, by the way, complete random aside, did you see the price of an XFL football?
No.
How much do you think they're selling them for?
Like $100
on XFL.com. $125
for a football. What's that made of?
Leather, the same as any other football. Apparently, though, instead of, you know, like a regular football has the dimples, the whatever you call those things,
yeah,
the graining. So the XFL ones, the graining is X-shaped. They're all like little X's.
Well, that's what makes them special.
Yeah, well, apparently, I read a whole thing about it. They, like, developed this football where, like...
Is this a bad sign for their business plan? That they're like, oh, we got to make $125 off these footballs to break even?
I mean, if the thing costs $100...
Like, what's a ticket to a game going to be? $500?
Well, I mean... $125 feels steep.
Let's do they have like a replica football? Will they have like an XFL replica Nerf football or something?
I don't know. So that's the thing, right?
Like, we're tight on time. Why'd you bring this up?
This is presumably the genuine one, but you can buy like a genuine sort of match style rugby ball is like €90, right? But you can buy a replica one for like 20.
So it's got to be a replica.
Yeah, there's got to be like a replica. Just give me the one that looks like an XFL ball, but it's just a crap piece of plastic.
We going to get one for the office?
Not at $125 or not.
Yeah, no. Neil would never sign off on that. That's not a good expense. Stay tuned, though, for the XFL. We might be involved in the coverage. Mm-hmm. We might cover it. Of course, we're going to cover it. We cover everything. We
covered the AAF. You better believe we're diving in the
wall
XFL.
To wall. So if you're looking for wall-to-wall XFL coverage in February, we'll have it for you.
Uh-huh.
Bucks at the Jags.
Okay.
Can we get, so Foles has been a little bit more on the conservative end,
mm-hmm.
right? Throwing the short stuff. He's got to go full Jameis to compete with Jameis in this game. We need Super Bowl Foles against future MVP Jameis in this one.
So Jameis being cesium, Foles has got to go full Frankium in order to overcome.
I don't have my table
here. Periodic table?
I don't have the periodic table.
We should get a slide and put it up on Parker behind us.
Yeah,
periodic table of elements. We can rename it with the quarterbacks.
Yeah, we'll just draw them in. And yeah, we Jameis. We'll do that.
That's nice. I like that. That's a good plan. Let's do that. So, yeah, Jameis is cesium. Foles is going to have to go full Frankium in order to contend.
Nobody has any idea what you're talking about.
People do. People are smart. Plus, people have listened to the podcast and heard us talk about
season.
We
were questioning whether our people could even spell cyber.
I wasn't questioning. I was simply saying if they couldn't, maybe this is
like
if
you
them.
Can't, just like stop listening or whatever.
Probably.
Yeah, appreciate all you listeners, though. We're breaking records this year, so that's been great. So stick with us. Anything else in particular you're looking for here? Jamel Dean's been playing outstanding football.
Yeah, really has.
Cornerback from the Bucs, giving up almost nothing the last 2 weeks after getting torched against the Seahawks a few weeks ago.
And I think more importantly, making a ton of pass breakups, right?
Oh, yeah.
Which means, so I think simply the volume of those that he's been able to have speaks to how tight the coverage has been.
Right?
You don't get that many pass breakups unless you have been glued tight to a receiver pretty consistently. So that's really encouraging. The other thing is that this game is probably going to have to be in Nick Foles' hands a lot because the Bucs have one of the best run defenses in the NFL. The Jags are unlikely to be able to pound Lenny up the middle. Not that they'll stop trying, but at some point, like, Nick Foles is going to have to win this game if they're going to win it. In fact, the more I talk this out, the more I'm sad that I took the Jags. In fact, let's change that right now.
Jamel Dean with three pass breakups, passer rating of 45.6 over the last 2 weeks. And his teammate, Carlton Davis, another big-bodied corner from Auburn, four pass breakups over the last 2 weeks. So that's what you're looking for if you're Tampa Bay.
They have one of the weirdest, like, collection of body types for cornerbacks in the NFL.
Yeah, I really wish Hargraves was involved.
Yeah, but he's now gone.
Sorry, that was just last week for Dean. Just my filter was off. In his last two games, five pass breakups and an interception. He's given up four catches for 32 yards on 14 targets. Jamel Dean. Hmm. So, just something to keep an eye on in that secondary. Bucks are showing, I don't know, man. They're showing just like, they're like a lesser version of the Titans. They were intriguing earlier in the year, and they've just been up and down. So you've changed your pick to the Bucs.
Yeah. We got an update on,
and I'm going with the Jags.
On Cesium Watch, leads the NFL in turnover-worthy plays. He's crawling his way back up the big-time throw.
Man, having 20 interceptions in today's NFL is difficult.
It is.
As we head into week 13.
If you limit...
Like Aaron Rodgers has 20 interceptions in like the last 4 years.
Is it even? It's probably longer, right?
Maybe. Not that that's a great thing. Which,
right. You know, if you limit it to just the sort of quarterback plays the way we did with Lamar earlier, Jameis Winston still leads the NFL in turnover-worthy plays. So he is at least tied now with Phillip Rivers, and Daniel Jones is one behind him.
So there you go. They are the same guy.
Highly volatile.
Los Angeles Rams at the Arizona Cardinals. A lot of division matchups here this week. What are we looking for in this one?
This is interesting because the Rams look like hot garbage last week. They're in trouble. Like, they're a mess right now. And Arizona isn't bad.
So the last few years, I put this poll out just for fun, right? In 2017, we saw second year Carson Wentz make a little MVP run. Last year, we saw the second year, even though it was his first year starter, Patrick Mahomes win the MVP. This year, it's Lamar. And I said, you know, which second year breakout was the best? Everybody voted Mahomes. It was like 60% Mahomes, 33% Lamar, and like 3% Wentz, whatever that adds up to, right? Whatever, yeah. 60-33 to Wentz. Is Kyler Murray going to be the next second year breakout? I mean, he's flashed everything you wanted to see from him this year, right? The big playability, protecting the football. He's shown enough of that dynamic running ability that elevated his value coming out of the draft.
Well, I mean, your options are basically Kyler Murray or Daniel Jones. So,
okay, well, I'm not saying there needs to be a second year breakout every single year. That's not how things work.
I mean, it's how things work if you're looking at second year breakouts.
Is he the next guy to have a big second year breakout? I'm not saying there has to be one. I'm saying is Kyler Murray in the MVP race next year?
MVP race?
Yeah.
I mean, no.
You're not ready to make that jump?
No. No, I'm not. I think the intriguing thing about this matchup is
He might be.
This Cardinals offense has looked a lot better. It's been getting better over the season. I still think they're a work in progress. I still think they feel like, you know, partway through the install. But they've definitely been improving, as has Kyler Murray. Now, what's interesting is they're going to go up against the Los Angeles Rams team that will play a lot of man coverage. And I still don't love the Cardinals receivers. So as much as they've been able to get you know, reasonable amount of joy, I think life will be made more difficult for them this week. But then we thought that last week and the Rams got torched.
So I got to take a quick. Knows. This is a Thanksgiving tradition.
Uh-huh.
You seen this picture?
Yes.
Gene Fournette.
Yeah.
From the Jags beat writer. That was back in 2013. It is one of my favorite things now. He posted probably the worst looking turkey I've ever seen in my life. Sorry, Gene. It's not great. And it's like, big bird going down. He's carving it up. So every single year, there's like a bunch of people that just retweet this thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the best looking turkey.
It's not a good looking turkey.
But there's other people that put like unseasoned raw turkey pictures out there, yeah, too. And it's like, big birds going into the oven. People coming over. It's just hilarious to me. That's good. Right?
Okay.
I'll retweet it so you guys can see.
Yeah, you do that.
At PFF underscore Steve. My follower accounts, really. If you guys aren't following me and you're one of the millions, we should have millions of followers. We have millions of listeners. Everybody should be following us on Twitter
as well. You're losing ground to the fantasy guys.
I don't want to hear it.
It's starting to get embarrassing.
I'm taking Arizona in this one. Sorry, Rams. It's not looking good over there.
Same.
You are as well. Chargers, Broncos. Drew Lock watch.
Yeah, this is a vaguely depressing game.
I'm taking the Chargers. All I want to see is
Drew Lock.
Philip Rivers not being done. Philip Rivers isn't done, right? He'll have other good games.
You would think so, right? It seems too precipitous. Mm. Is that the right word?
Cliffy?
Yeah, too cliff-like.
Like when you're Max Kellerman and you're like, Brady's going to fall off a cliff, and you predict it for 5 straight years.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it seems like too steep a decline to just have driven off, and now Philip Rivers sucks.
I don't believe in cliffs. So, Philip Rivers bounces back. I'm taking the Chargers. And if you tuned in to listen to some Chargers-Broncos analysis, I'm sorry.
Yeah, rough week for you. Same.
We have some better games to get to. Oakland Raiders at the Kansas City Chiefs.
Yeah, so this game is fun, and yet it's so much less fun than it was a week ago.
Would have been more intriguing.
Right, where the Raiders actually looked like they were rolling.
Yeah.
Instead, the Raiders get just wrecked by the Jets. And now it's like, oh, okay, fine. Now, I guess the good news is that the Chiefs' defense is still bad. And they're still more than bad enough to turn this Raiders offense into good again. What are you laughing at?
Ben's calling me out for saying something bad.
What did you say? Tell the people what you said.
He's flashed everything you want to see.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Was I describing Kyler?
I don't know. Yeah, flashing does have some negative connotations in a certain way.
You know what I mean, Ben? Ben, come on, man.
So anyway,
Ben, I thought you were taking today off.
The Chiefs' defense is definitely bad enough to make Oakland look good again on offense and actually turn this into a game. But it's hard to see how the Raiders' defense can necessarily slow down Kansas City. So
what a crazy game they played. Was it week 2 earlier in the year? Kansas City scored 28 points all in the second quarter. Mahomes almost threw for 300 yards in the second quarter alone. Yeah. He threw for over 400 in the game, and there was a 75-yarder negated by a penalty. I mean, yeah, it was ridiculous.
They, like, stopped them for 3 full quarters and then conceded 28 in 1 quarter and lost.
All that said, this was a game where Mahomes actually, again, context here, could have played much better. Did not play great, despite all the stats. He left a few throws on the table. He had a fumble. This was back in the days when we were like, look, Mahomes' numbers are off the charts, but like there's some scheme stuff in here. They're running wide open guys up the seam, and there's yards after the catch and all these things happening. But his deep ball was fantastic in that game. The Chiefs' offense deep ball was fantastic in that game. I don't trust this Raiders secondary at all.
Yeah. The Raiders, by the way, are one of the people waiting to take victory laps things. You know, everyone that loved their draft is just doing laps right now. It's like, at the moment, the greatest thing about your draft is that your fourth round pick is better than your first round pick.
Max Crosby over Cleveland Furl.
Right. Earl, which is not great. Right?
And so the victory lap came when Trayvon Mullen had the game clinching interception against Ryan Finley.
Yes.
And the Bengals. And Trayvon Mullen had a very good game.
It's also true to say that Josh Jacobs has been fantastic. The problem was never that Josh Jacobs is a bad player. It's that even if he's incredible, it won't matter.
Like, yeah, it's the value of adding to, you know, winning football games.
He is doing as good a job as anybody in recent years of overcoming not great blocking and generating more of his own yardage than anybody else. But last year, Saquon Barkley looked like the best back in the league by a distance, and the Giants weren't winning. This year, Saquon Barkley looks like crap because the blocking hasn't been there. So this is the same thing, right? It's like Jacobs may be doing amazing right now, but the point is, if the Raiders' offensive line, if he isn't able to sustain this level of overcoming blocking, or if the blocking gets worse, next year it won't matter. And ultimately, you'll have taken a guy in the first round whose production you could have gotten in the fifth.
We also said for the second straight year, we kind of liked the Raiders draft if you just put it in reverse.
Yes.
Like their day three picks. So Max Crosby was fantastic at Eastern Michigan. Good size and athleticism and all that stuff. Not surprised that he's been a pretty productive edge rusher. The previous year, they got Maurice Hurst. I still don't think you can look at the Raiders draft and say they got Cleveland Farrell, they got Josh Jacobs, Jonathan Abram, and Trayvon Mullen with their four picks in the top 40.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how you could watch football this year and say that's been well done.
And that was
that's,
the point,
that's the best
the
way to spend those top 40
picks. It
was
four picks in the top 40. You have a once-in-a-generation chance to make something special happen in a draft. And instead, you deliberately targeted conservative, you know, middle-of-the-road picks. You went with solid as opposed to what could be spectacular.
Right.
To me, that just seems like a waste of an opportunity that doesn't come around very often.
I thought there were better opportunities there. So
and even
yes.
if they all work out as solid, I don't think that actually changes that. So a lot of people are quote tweeting something I said, which was, this is a franchise defining draft for the Raiders. It's just a shame what it's defining them as, right? And they're like, well, what do you think about that now? Honestly, I think the same thing, right? What you're defining your franchise as right now is average. And that just seems like a waste of four picks in the top 40. You want to define your franchise as ambitious, as, you know, going someplace. You don't want to define it as we want to stick to the middle of the road and win eight games every year.
I also think, again, if you're an evaluator, if you could just be honest about what is driving wins and losses. If you looked at the Raiders team last year,
I wonder how much of it is they don't know.
Maybe they don't know. I mean, because you hear people all the time. Like the big thing, I think it was the Falcons needed to work on this year. It was like, we got to get better at third and one. You know, last year, third and one screwed us. So we got to get better at third and one. Well, if you just get better at third and one and everything else is bad, well, you're going to win three games like they have.
Or,
so far.
You know, the period they went where they wanted to get tougher.
They were going to get tougher. Like, we're just going to stop the run
achieving?
And get tough. So listen, here's my take on the Raiders. They picked fourth overall last year.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't that bad. Like they underachieved last year for what their roster should have been. I didn't think they were a disastrous roster. This year, they're playing more to the level of where I think they should have been last year. So when people look in a vacuum and they're like, well, last year they were this, and this year they're competing for a playoff spot, therefore they've gotten better, when I would say they're a similar team and they're just, you know, a few things have gotten better so far this year.
A few things have gotten better, and they're on the right side of a bunch of close games.
Yeah, that too. Defense still a major question mark. Bottom line, I think Derek Carr cannot have a 5.5 average depth of target in this game. Like, unleash Derek Carr. Who cares if he throws four picks? Go full Jameis in this game. Go head-to-head with Mahomes. Go get him, Raiders. That's how you have to. You can't play conservative football in this one. Got to attack.
Derek Carr right now has the number 5 overall PFF passing grade.
Yeah. I mean, when they let him throw the ball down the field, he does it pretty efficiently.
10th in overall grade because
his fumbles have been really bad.
But 5th in passing grade.
When he throws the ball, like, let him throw the ball a little bit more. He can do it. Yeah. And they've done a nice job. We're all taking the Chiefs. Well,
yes.
You and I are taking the Chiefs. I don't know what everyone else is doing. Picks aren't all the way in. Two more games to get through. Sunday Night Football, New England Patriots at the Houston Texans.
Yeah. This will be interesting.
So I think this could be a game where the New England passing game gets back on track.
Right. It's starting to look more and more like the Texans have kind of found their level. You know, we thought earlier in the season that they might be able to essentially off the back of Deshaun Watson overachieve and become a really dangerous team in the postseason. It starts to look like, well, A, if you're able to cause him to have a bad game, and B, if anything other than him is involved in winning the game, they have problems.
Yeah.
Which has been the case. Like, the loss of J.J. Watt is significant. They don't have anything like the pass rushing threat on defense that they used to have. Their coverage has been not good basically through the entirety of the season. Now they don't have pass rush covering it up, and Deshaun Watson hasn't been able to be Superman for a while.
Yeah, I mean, they're dangerous when Will Fuller is out there and DeAndre Hopkins is out there. I mean, that's tough to defend, but there is just a lot of pressure on Watson, and he's had, we've said for a few years now, had some really bad games and some really high end games. That's just what he is.
Yeah, he's had one essentially good game since the Colts in Week 7. So four games since then. One of them has been above grade 70. One of them has also been 48.
He's got two games under 50 this year.
Yes,
Carolina and then
Baltimore.
So I think matchup wise in this one, New England. If you talk about like what Belichick likes to do defensively, he's scared of speed. He puts extra resources to stopping speed. He double teams Tyreek Hill. I think Will Fuller gets some extra attention, right? He gets double teams, and then we see a lot of Stephon Gilmore versus DeAndre Hopkins. So I think that'll be a good
matchup to watch. Big on keeping these sort of mobile quarterbacks in the pocket, not
right.
letting them escape and make things happen and just be dangerous. I think Deshaun Watson is like third in terms of scrambles right now.
Well, that's the thing about Watson too. He's not. So Watson, it's so trying to think of how to describe this. If he knows exactly where he's going to go pre-snap, he'll catch it. He'll get rid of it. He'll be fine. If you give him any different look after the snap, he's not as good going from that first read to the second read. He's a little impatient, and that's when he looks to kind of break the pocket. So if pre-snap aligns, you'll get that quick passing game. If it doesn't, he'll try to break contain. So that's where New England either has to play really well from a contain standpoint, and if Watson does break the pocket, he becomes extremely dangerous, or Watson has to just be a little bit more patient because they're not going to be coming after him. He's got to be patient to get to that next read, see if the next man's open, and then look to take off.
It's a little like Russell Wilson, but I think with less design to it. When they have to hold the ball and start working through progressions, they're not comfortable sitting in a pocket. Wilson starts to move around and essentially buy himself time to do the reading on the move, right?
Yeah.
I think Watson does the same thing, but it's with less design to it. He just instinctively is not comfortable in the pocket doing that and starts to get panicky, moves around, and then in the course of doing that, he's able to find where he wants to go.
Then he looks up and he does look try to.
And he also will take off way more than Russell Wilson when that happens. But it's an interesting dynamic because the Patriots will essentially try and keep him hemmed in the pocket, which will probably go one of two ways, right? Either he'll be able to do that dancing and create enough time to buy some throws and make some plays, or it's actually really the way to beat him because you force him in a place where he's really not comfortable and he'll cause some problems and take a lot of sacks.
Well, people always say against mobile quarterbacks, you can't play man coverage, right? The Patriots play more man than anyone. The way that you do it is you have to play with good lane discipline because if he breaks contain, it's a 30-yard gain. So just, again, something to keep an eye on, that cat and mouse game. Do the Patriots stay in their man coverage looks? Do they mix it up with more zone? Do they play contain properly? Does Watson break containing? He's got to create some of those spectacular plays. I mean, if we talk about the Texans winning this game, I think Watson's made four or five big time throws, and he gets, because it's in primetime, he gets MVP discussion because that's all that matters.
He has three games this season in which he's taken six sacks, and only one of them, it was against a team that actually has any kind of pass rush. So honestly, that game plan of keeping him hemmed in a pocket is his biggest nightmare because it's where he doesn't want to be. And that's how you get him to take some ill-advised sacks and basically bury the offense.
And New England likes to they like to compress the walls on you. They don't like to, necessarily beat their man and lose contain.
Exactly. Magnifies what he doesn't want to happen.
So I do think, New England's passing attack has been, the big story. Brady's regressing and nobody's getting open and they're all slow. I think game in the dome. So they're not playing in the storms anymore. Game in the dome against this Texan secondary. Between this game, I think they play at Cincinnati. I'm sorry, Kansas City, and then at Cincinnati. I think New England has a chance in this little December stretch to kind of change their narrative that their offense is the big issue and the defense is carrying them. So, and if they don't, I think that's concerning. So I think this is a big stretch for New England to take advantage of some porous defenses, show that they could still win with the pass game and show that they're as well-rounded a team as the Ravens right now, who beat them a few weeks
ago. Another fun thing to watch. Can N'Keal Harry separate against bad players?
There you go. You're just going to be all over that. Your whole, his whole career, huh?
Yeah, pretty much. Final game.
We're both taking New England.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then, did they play on Monday Night Football last year?
Who?
Vikings Seahawks?
I don't remember.
Wasn't that Monday Night Football?
So this is a really
Wilson
interesting.
Wilson had like the worst throw of the season in that game.
Yeah, this is a really interesting game. Because,
Vikings at Seahawks, by the way, is what we're discussing. Yeah, Monday Night Football.
Monday Night Football. So it's fascinating because at the moment, I think the general consensus is that Minnesota is winning this game. The PFF consensus is that the reverse is happening. So if you look at PickWatch, if anyone doesn't know that, PickWatch.com, it's basically where like it collates.
They're all taking Minnesota?
A lot of people, it's like 66% taking Minnesota on the road.
Kirk Cousins
on the road
in prime time on the road.
Yes.
Outside of the friendly confines of a dome.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. In Seattle.
In Seattle.
Where bad things have happened.
With MVP Russell Wilson.
Yeah. 67% are taking Minnesota right now. So the general consensus is Minnesota's taking this. The PFF consensus, so far everybody whose picks are actually filled in are going Seattle. Green Line, which is driven off the data, likes Minnesota or likes Seattle even more than the market does. So Vegas has them as a 3-point favorite, which is essentially a pick game, right? Because they're at home.
Right.
But Green Line says the edge is actually more than that. It should be Seattle should be a greater favorite than just the home record. It's sort of a fascinating game because of that, right? The Vikings have kind of been rolling. They've got themselves back to parity with the Green Bay Packers. Mm-hmm. And generally the outside perception is, yeah, they can go and beat Seattle. And we really don't think that's going to happen.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like the Cousins narrative thing is more fun than anything. There's nothing in sports that's like, because this thing has happened the first, 15 times, therefore it's going to happen the 16th.
History, Steve. History.
You know, but Cousins absolutely can go have a good game.
So Cousins is now the number 3 graded passing quarterback at PFF.
He's been playing really well this
only
year.
Only Russell Wilson, MVP caliber Russell Wilson, and Drew Brees, who's only played, 220 dropbacks this season, have a higher grade.
Yeah, since those early games, Cousins has just been incredibly efficient, incredibly accurate.
He's fourth overall, right? When you go to overall grade, the rushing comes into that, and Lamar jumps him, right? Lamar's number 2 when you look at rushing.
Cousins had those ridiculous fumbles on scrambles earlier in the year, bad ones.
But what's interesting is, so we were, started off the year. Remember, like after 2 weeks, there was like a mutiny in Minnesota. Like Stephon Diggs was supposedly going to get traded.
Yeah.
Adam Thielen was calling him out to the media. Like there was a disaster. Everyone thought Kirk Cousins was garbage and the whole thing was going to implode. Then he goes on a run and plays an MVP level for like, 4 or 5 game stretch in the middle. And then Kansas City, we have, an iffy performance. It's like, well, there it goes. The roller coaster's come back down. This is the start of the decline again. And then maybe Cousins can come back up in time for the playoffs. And that's when you actually want him to get hot. But since then, he's kind of played well again, a couple of games. So we're now talking about 9 game period in which Cousins has been pretty good.
Yeah.
Better than pretty good, in fact. Been at least pretty good. That is the best stretch of his career. It is more than good enough for this team to actually win things, and it feels massively unsustainable.
No, so here's, I mentioned a few weeks ago, I don't know, I haven't updated the stat, but remember Cousins had something like 30% of his yards coming just off of boot action and screens. That's a massive percentage. So I think the Vikings have done a really good job of scheming it up. If I told you before, if I was playing these outside zone schemes, I would play the quarterback every time. I would say, trust my guys to play the run and the cutback. I'm attacking the quarterback. But it's not that simple, right? Because sometimes they boot, but they're going to throw it back to the screen. And other times it's a full boot. Sometimes they're booting both ways. Cousins has been, rolling out to his left like crazy and unbelievably efficient doing that. So it's not as simple as, hey, just, play the boot action every single time. But I think if you could take away some of those free yards that the Vikings offense has created, the screen game and the, you know, the boot action, the rollout stuff, that's where they've got all those free yards. And then Cousins in the dropback game and in the red zone where he had struggled previously in his career has been really good. Like, he's made some incredible red zone throws back of the end zone, away from coverage. He's done a really nice job, and he just looks really, really comfortable. And I think a big part of it is because the Vikings have created some of the easy stuff, and then he's excelling in, you know, in what you would call, you know, the true dropback situations, right?
Yeah. And if you take out the first couple of weeks where he did struggle, he's the number one graded quarterback in the NFL, both overall and in passing. Like, yep. Cousins, since that point, has genuinely been playing at an MVP level. It's just amazing how little confidence anybody has in that continuing.
Right.
It is. Because it's Kirk Cousins.
Yeah.
And you expect him to come back down to earth at some point. And this feels like the game where that would happen, if it's going to happen.
Last year when they did play, I think it was ugly both ways. Neither guy played great. I mentioned that Russell Wilson throw. That was like end of the half. He was about to get sacked. He flipped it to the sideline, and instead the sideline was called Eric Kendricks. Went right into his hands.
Sideline was called Eric Kendricks.
Who dropped it when he easily could have just, you know, he probably would have run it.
What I would say about
90 yards for a touchdown.
So other than, I think multiple things about the Minnesota Vikings feel like they are unsustainable. They feel like they're built on foundations of sand. By that, I mean, A, Kirk Cousins is currently playing at an MVP level. We've never really seen that over an extended period of time before in his career. Two, their offensive line is still not good. Mm-hmm. It's decent. Yeah, it's reasonable. The tackles, it's questionable inside. At some point, that becomes a problem when you face really good defenses. Three, their cornerbacks are a problem. Against good teams in particular, they have real issues. We're actually reaching the stage where if it wasn't for the fact that he's a suspension waiting to happen, Holton Hill should probably be starting over Xavier Rhodes.
That extreme, Sam?
I think so. I think Rhodes is an issue, and I think Holton Hill, in limited sample size, might be their best cover corner. Either way, the fact that that's a discussion is a problem, right? Because the Vikings have one of the better pass rushes in the NFL. They have a very good scheme, and they have cornerbacks that get eviscerated by good receivers.
This guy says Sam hates the Vikings.
Okay. I don't think that's true, but sure.
They must not know your history.
So I just think there's multiple aspects of this team that are questionable, and they're sort of, they're able to paper over them so far, but is that a long-term, can you win against the better teams in the NFL with those issues? My suggestion would be no.
I mean, all that said, here are the Seahawks issues. They run the ball too much with their MVP quarterback playing at the highest level of his career. I already said, don't get fooled by the fact that he only had 200 yards last week. He lost 100 yards from drops alone last week against the Eagles.
Mm-hmm.
So he played at an MVP level still last week. Seattle's defense has played better in recent weeks, but it's nothing like what they were.
Their D is not good.
Right? So Seattle has just as many issues. I mean, this is...
Sure.
This is the story of the NFC and why it's so wide open. It's a whole bunch of flawed teams that are... Good, though.
I'm not necessarily saying that this is the game where all Minnesota's problems are going to come back to roost.
Well, you hate the Vikings.
I'm just saying that at some point they are, right?
Yeah.
This is not, I don't think that unless those things improve or some aspects of them improve, this is a team that can beat the best teams in the NFL. I think ultimately, like 2017, you can see it coming, right? We're going to reach a point where they face a team and the problems are suddenly exposed, and those are the issues. But I don't know if this is going to be it, though. Greg, though, Russell Wilson going up against those Minnesota corners feels like it could be, you know, problems.
Yeah, I think it'll be a good one. Will be a good game. If I'm Seattle down the stretch here, I would put more on my MVP's plate.
Yeah.
Put more on Wilson's plate here in December. Let him carry you to a number one seed or a bye, I should say.
This is MVP bowl. Since week two, these are the two highest graded quarterbacks in the NFL.
Yeah, Cousins is not in the MVP race. Nobody will allow him.
They won't, but honestly, like...
The Green Bay game happened.
Yeah.
So in this season...
Weeks 1 and 2 happened, but
Cousins was on the winning end of a game where he threw 10 passes, and the following week was a disaster against the Packers, and he's played really well since then.
Yeah, and honestly, the numbers against Green Bay don't actually look that terrible. Like they were. I mean, he was awful.
He had like five turnover-worthy plays and two fumbles that didn't show up.
I know that. Yes. But what I'm saying is when you get to the point where he's been playing really well for an extended period of time and people just start looking at the stats, he'll look good.
Oh, his stats look great.
Right? Yeah. Whereas, well, you need to actually see grade or remember the game to really appreciate just how bad that was.
Well, remember we were talking about week four with the Bears. The numbers don't look bad there. He was
that's
terrible.
What I'm saying. Yeah, you go through it and it's, you know, 230 yards, a touchdown, two interceptions, passer rating of 50. Like, it's not good, but it's not, oh my God, what happened, which is what actually did happen.
Should be a good game. We're all going Seattle, like we said. A lot of people go in Minnesota, which means, yeah, it'll be... should be a good one on primetime. Can Cousins win in primetime on the road outdoors? Mm-hmm. Did he recently? Didn't they? What was their other primetime game recently?
Dallas. I mean, they beat Dallas. That was, wasn't that was outside.
Don't.
Yeah.
Yeah. Indoors.
I'm just saying the MVP Bowl.
MVP Bowl. Minnesota and Seattle. So there you have it. It's week 13.
It is.
Nice and snug under 2 hours. We did it.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody enjoy their Thanksgiving. Hopefully you guys are listening to us when you're traveling, enjoying family, giving thanks. Sam's American now, so he's going to give thanks and do the whole thing. You're loving it, right?
I'm thankful for the Driscoll Biscoll.
The Driscoll Biscoll. I'm thankful for the next coffee that you're going to get me whenever that happens.
Right. Next time I go, I've learned from you bitching at me, you'll get a coffee.
Don't forget, Cyber 40, 40% off all PFF annual products. That's Edge or Elite. You're going to get it for 365 days. 366 if it's a leap year.
Also, shop.pff.com. We have ugly Christmas sweaters.
Is it a leap year next year?
I don't know. What the hell? Like,
I think it's a leap year next year, so you might get 366 days of access.
Wow. Have you checked that? Do we know that's how it works?
That's what we should sell. We should have a leap year sale.
Okay.
Talk to Jeff. Yeah, shop.pff.com. Go check out all those things. And everybody enjoy your Thanksgiving and enjoy the football. We'll see you guys Monday morning with your Week 13 recap.
Quick break to tell you guys about NFL Game Pass, the only way that you can replay every game all season long. You can relive all the gutsy calls, crazy catches, wild comebacks, and breakout stars from every game every week. It's all the action, all the football you can handle, all in one place. So every game that we're talking about right now, you guys can rewatch it after the fact. I'm going to be going back, and you guys can too. Go check out Lamar Jackson in week one. Go check out Dak Prescott and what that Cowboys offense actually did. Go check out Kyler Murray and his NFL debut. That's my favorite thing about NFL Game Pass. You can go back and watch at any time. And if you haven't watched a condensed game yet, you have to try it out. It's every play from the game back to back to back, so you can replay an entire NFL game in the fraction of the time it normally takes. It's how I'm able to follow all the MVP candidates, all the breakout stars, and, of course, your waiver wire pickups all season long. To see all the action this season and stay on top of all the big storylines, you need NFL Game Pass. Best of all, you can kick off the 2019 NFL season with a 7-day free trial of NFL Game Pass. Just sign up now at NFL.com/Pro Football Focus NFL.